Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, moving on from the child abuse crisis that has rocked churches around the world. Bishops, priests and lay experts gather here in the Vatican for a conference focused on child protection and support for survivors. The Pontifical Mission Societies in England and Wales relaunch their work in support of churches in the poorest countries of the world. A team from the World Council of Churches comes to the Vatican for meetings aimed at strengthening ecumenical cooperation. And Pope Benedict celebrates Mass to mark the Feast of Corpus Christi. For the Feast of Corpus Christi on Thursday, Pope Benedict celebrated Mass in front of his own cathedral as Bishop of Rome, the Basilica of St. John Lateran, before leading the traditional Eucharistic procession along the adjacent Via Merulana to the Basilica of St. Mary Major. Veronica Scaresbrick will have more details on that Mass and the Pope's activities for the Feast of Corpus Christi on her programme at this same time tomorrow. What is the Catholic Church doing to overcome the crisis sparked by child abuse scandals in countries around the world? How are bishops responding to the needs of survivors to rebuild their shattered lives? How are parishes, schools or youth centres working to ensure that such sexual abuse can never happen again? Questions that are asked over and over again, and ones which bishops in many countries have been trying hard to answer, setting up comprehensive plans for child protection, victim support and community healing, as well as responding to all the legal and financial fallout from abuse cases in their own diocese. Here in the Vatican, a group of bishops, religious and lay people working on the front line with this crisis met last week for their 10th Anglophone conference to consult with Vatican officials and share problems, progress and examples of best practice with other bishops' conferences across the English-speaking world. Among them was the president of the Australian Bishops' Conference, Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide, who's been working on child protection issues for many years. He told me more about this important Vatican meeting.
The group of people who've been meeting this conference come from English-speaking bishops' conferences around the world, and we've been meeting for over 10 years. Initially, we met every second year, but we decided, given the nature of these difficulties, that it would be good for us to gather together every year. And one of the important parts of our work is to review the situation in each of our countries, to see what the trends are, what kinds of things are happening, but more importantly, to learn from one another about how to make effective responses in this area. It seems to me that in the wake of this crisis that has faced the church, that there have been several areas that we need to attend to, and these have been part of the life of this conference. The first is, preeminently, we have to work out the best ways of being able to respond to the victims and their families and helping them. The second is that we have to also work out ways of dealing effectively with the perpetrators and making sure that there are criminal issues that they're dealt with, but also making sure that their opportunities to do those terrible things are stopped. We also have to look at issues associated with the selection and training of personnel, clergy and religious to make sure that there's very good psychological screening and formation as they move towards holy orders and taking their vows. The final element is that we really have to work hard to create what is described around the world as a child-safe environment, to influence the life of the church and the wider society, to create systems and ways of doing things that are powerfully oriented towards looking after children.
These are issues, as you say, which affect the church all over the world. I'm wondering, how much are you working just on a country basis on this, and how much are you coordinating here with the Vatican, with the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, for example, and with the Pope himself?
Sure. We've had a very good working relationship with the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, and that began when the Holy Father was the prefect, Cardinal Ratzinger. And his intervention and involvement with us through the offices of the congregation have been very helpful and very positive. We still work in conjunction with the congregation. We're also looking to talk to people about wider issues about child protection than just the matters of dealing with the crimes that have been committed. We'd be looking, as time goes on now, to talk to people who are involved in the life of the Vatican about what we can do positively around the world to create these safe environments for children.
You're talking about creating this more positive atmosphere, but certainly the crisis was a huge challenge for the church in so many of these different countries. Do you think we are actually through the crisis now?
No, I don't think we are. I think that the crisis will take a long time to move through. My hope is that as a result of all of the positive work that we've done in those areas I mentioned before, especially in relationship to responding to survivors, to people who have been abused and supporting them, and then especially in setting up the systems that will mean that children who are given into our care are protected and that we do all that we can to make sure that they can't be abused in any way, much less sexually, but that they're cared for, and that's a real constant in the way that the church and everybody in the church thinks about things. So it has ramifications for the way that we look at family life, how we need to strengthen family life, how we need to strengthen parental skills, how we need to educate young people to be in charge of their lives and to be free without being paranoid, but to be free in relationship to these matters. I think good, hard, steady work, like has gone on since this crisis began, steady work over a long period of time, will lead us to a new situation where we'll be able to say that not only have we passed through the crisis, but we've actually grown and developed in a really positive and wonderful way.
But the Vatican meeting took on a particular poignancy for the church in Ireland, reeling from the recent revelations contained in the Ryan Report, the first of three major reports this year, setting out in graphic and shocking detail the extent of the physical, sexual and psychological abuse that went on unchecked for decades in schools and parishes around the country. Ian Elliott is Chief Executive Officer of Ireland's National Board for Safeguarding Children in the Catholic Church.
Obviously, the findings are now in the public domain. The Ryan report has been published. It has a number of very important recommendations, which I believe have been entirely accepted and now will be actively applied throughout Ireland. Clearly, it brings to an end a very long and sad saga, really, for the Church. The Ryan Commission sat for 10 years and primarily dealt with the situation which existed within the residential institutions, the industrial schools in Ireland, the last of which closed in 1979. The findings are very, very shocking. But looking forward, the recommendations, I think, do provide a clear way forward with regard to the future.
As I understand it, though, the complaints from those survivors of that terrible abuse are that the findings do not go beyond an agreement already set between the government and the religious orders involved.
I'm not really in a position to comment on that, but yes, I have seen very clearly reported in the media that there is some degree of tension and dispute with regard to those findings. And you're quite right to point out that there are two further reports which are due to be published later in the year, one into the Archdiocese of Dublin and the other relating to the Diocese of Cloyne.
How much has this crisis damaged the church in Ireland, do you think?
I think that's a very difficult question to answer, and I wouldn't really want to hazard an opinion on that. But what I would say is that it has been a very important learning experience for the church. There are so many lessons which, you know, have been learned and are being applied. And as a consequence, the church will be stronger as a result of having learnt those lessons.
What about in terms of the survivor networks? There's a lot of anger, there's a lot of feeling that this still isn't being dealt with properly by the church. How do you respond to that?
I think one has always got to respond very openly and with a great deal of attention to the feelings of survivors. They are very important people that need to be engaged with and listened to. And their experiences are important, and we can learn from those experiences. So certainly, as far as my office is concerned, we have tried to do that and to hear sensitively the lessons that we need to learn through their experiences.
What are the most important steps that are being put in place to try and deal with this, to try and ensure that it can't happen again?
The creation of the National Board for Safeguarding Children in the Catholic Church is an important development that I would want to cite. We are sponsored by the Episcopal Conference, by the Conference of Religious of Ireland, and also by the Irish Missionary Union. So in a sense, we encompass the whole church, and we have their endorsement, we have their support, and that's a very important development, because going forward we need a whole church strategy to engaging these issues and to ensuring that they are adequately resolved.
How do you see that there was so much denial for so long about this issue? The perception was that in Catholic Ireland this couldn't possibly happen, and that lasted for many, many years, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and indeed the Ryan report makes that very clear. Again, that's one of those very important lessons that one has to learn and ensure that something of that nature cannot reoccur in the future. It's very important that we engage these issues, that we appreciate exactly what happened, we look at how it happened, and we ensure that something of that nature cannot happen in the future.
What are you hoping to learn from this meeting here in the Vatican?
It's a very important conference. It brings together people from across a number of territories in the Church. It's very good to hear directly from them what they are involved in, what developments are taking place in places as far apart as Papua New Guinea, India, the United States of America, apart from England and Wales and closer to home. But it's really good just to sit down with them and people and to hear from them what developments are taking place and indeed how they're tackling with the problems that they're meeting with within the Universal Church.
All those attending the Vatican meeting insist the churches have progressed in their efforts to make child protection a priority throughout all levels of parish and religious life. But how do they respond to those many victim and survivor networks who say it's simply too little, too late? Archbishop Wilson of Adelaide again.
All the people that I know that are working in this area, and I'm especially concerned with what response we're making in Australia, but all the people I know that work in this area have a high priority to care for the victims and those who have been abused and to do all that's possible to help them and to give them some liberation from what's happened, that they might be able to live meaningful and worthwhile lives.
What do you see as the most constructive, the most important key in this process of helping people to overcome that kind of abuse?
Well, again, I can only talk about the Australian experience because that's what I'm deeply involved in. That at the conclusion of the process that we put together in Australia, the victims meet with the bishop or the religious superior for a meeting, and I've found those to be wonderful experiences of growth. And the question that we ask them in that situation is, what can we do to help you now? And the responses can be varied. We've helped people in my own personal experience to take up new opportunities for education. People have needed help just to get on with their life where they happen to be and so on. So it can be a variation of things. But I think the most important thing is that it provides the bishop with the opportunity to say how sorry they are and to do that in a way that sincerely springs from your heart so that they really do hear that. And one of the things that I've said to people is, look, you know, you need to know how brokenhearted I am that this has happened, and I really am. And I want you to know that had I been there, I would have stopped them doing it to you. I wouldn't allow them to do this, because this should never have happened to you. And I think that kind of dialogue with people has been very helpful. It certainly has a profound effect in my life and reminds me of the big responsibilities that I have as being a bishop and shepherd of the people, and especially those who've been hurt in such terrible ways.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide, the president of the Australian Bishops' Conference. And earlier you heard Ian Elliott, Chief Executive Officer of Ireland's National Board for Safeguarding Children in the Catholic Church. Pontifical Mission Society in the United Kingdom relaunched its work throughout England and Wales this week, adopting a new name which it hopes will give new impetus to the vital work of supporting churches in some of the poorest countries of the world. Following a mass on Tuesday celebrated by the Nuncio to Great Britain, the four branches of the Mission Society rededicated their work with the new title Missio, stressing a unity of purpose in supporting the pastoral needs of churches in over 1,000 mission dioceses, mainly in Africa and Asia. Significantly, several European churches also use this same name, which will be officially adopted by the London-based organisations in September. Monsignor John Dale is National Director of Missio in England and Wales. He told me more about the purpose of this rededication and the work that the societies have been doing for over 70 years.
This is very, very significant for us. We're fortunate to have the Nuncio to come and celebrate Mass with us and to bless our new venture. And over the next few months before September, when we change absolutely, we've got that little bit of leeway to make it all very real for ourselves and our supporters.
Who are the majority of people who support the organisation at present?
Well, I think we're reflective of all the church, namely that we are in some areas a very ageing population, but in others that's only part of the story. In others we're very new. We've got lots of people from Eastern Europe, from the Philippines, from East and West Africa, who are all providing fresh life and enthusiasm to our parish system.
Tell us a bit about the scope of Missio's work then. It reaches to many, many different countries, many, many different churches, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Through our worldwide network, we're in touch with all 1,064 mission dioceses in the church, largely in Africa and Asia, a few in a few dioceses in Latin America. But it's this church which is growing so fast and with such enthusiasm and vivacity in Africa and Asia that really calls out our sense of wanting to share with them in that new life.
So what kind of projects, what kind of work is your missionary society supporting?
Okay, it's basically everything that the local church wants in terms of church. So we support the bishop in his ministry, and he supports his priests, sisters and lay leaders. We offer him whatever help we can. So we build churches and convents, dispensaries, presbyteries. Everything that the new church needs, we help with. And I suppose what makes us different from, say, development agencies is that we tend not to support projects like water pumps or feeding programs, or we tend not to deal with that. There's other aspects of the church life that deal with those.
So mainly,
we'll deal with the specific Catholic Christian faith dimension.
Tell us about some of these buildings, some of these places that you've seen with your own eyes, where people have been supported, have received vital help from your organisation.
Well, just a few weeks ago, I was in India. In Hyderabad, and seeing the church there just growing so fast, and particularly among people who are ostracized and who are cast to the margins of society, the Dalits, the untouchables. And there we built, the church has helped to set up housing projects and and building community centres where otherwise people were left in very impoverished state. We've helped with convents. Many of the religious orders in India are growing very quickly, and it's our privilege to be able to support them in their pastoral work.
You're providing this financial support to these churches in the developing countries. What are these churches, would you say, giving back to you, to your organisation, to the church in the UK as a whole?
Yes, what they give back to us is a real sense of being a universal Catholic church, and we can't have that on our own. You know, you can't be universal when you're on your own. So they make us into a family. We need them far more than they need us.
You say that people support right across the church in the UK support the work of your organisation. How much has the current economic crisis, the financial downturn, how much has that affected your work?
Okay, that I can't say for the moment. I think if it's going to affect us, we'll know towards the end of the year. At the moment, it seems as though people are still being very, very generous, and we won't lose out. But it's not easy to say that. It's not easy to predict.
If anybody listening to the programme would like to support your work, to get in touch with you, what's the best way of doing that or to find out more about what Missio is doing?
Go to our website, www.missio.org.uk. And it's a wonderful website. There's lots of news there. There's prayer boards. There's indications as to where our money is spent and how best people can donate to the work.
Thanks there to Monsignor John Dale, National Director of Missio in England and Wales. A team of ecumenical experts from the World Council of Churches is visiting Rome and the Vatican this week with the aim of strengthening cooperation with the Catholic Church in areas of mission and evangelism. The World Council of Churches brings together nearly 350 different churches and Christian denominations in countries all around the world, working to promote common witness and progress towards full unity between the divided communities. Jacques Mattei is a Protestant pastor and director of the WCC program on unity, mission, evangelism and spirituality. I caught up with him at the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity to find out more about this week's visit to Rome.
The aim of these meetings is mainly to deepen relationships. We have a tradition of coming from the people working on mission and evangelism particularly. We come regularly to Rome, and our colleagues from the Pontifical Council on Unity and others come to Geneva from time to time as well. You know, it is to deepen relationship and through that also to enable us to work together better.
You're trying to keep the focus of ecumenism, working together between the different churches, as a real focus, aren't you, of all the different parts of the work of the WCC?
Yes, that's the main aim of the WCC, but of course it means working together on the specific theological questions which divide churches, but also on questions linked to social, cultural, ethnic and other elements where churches are divided. And then as a kind of an extension of this work, we also work to heal wounds in the world in general. We can't heal the wounds, we can give signs that God wants to heal the wounds. So I mean that the work we do in WCC, as I think the same for all churches, is that we try to provide signs of what we think the gospel is all about. And so we think the gospel has to do with healing relationships between churches, because God wants us to be one. And we haven't yet realized what it means fully, but God also wants the world to be able to live without conflicts which lead to violence, oppression and poverty.
And yet these divisions between the churches, which persist and in some places seem to almost be getting harder to resolve, this weakens, doesn't it, the witness that you do in all these other areas?
Yes, there is a direct link. Of course this weakens it. And so that's why I think there WCC and the Vatican have a similar idea, that we really need to work at different levels of Christian witness in the world and Christian life and community life in order that all these elements are seen as having a link with each other.
The Catholic Church, as you know, is a member of certain parts of the World Council of Churches, certain commissions, but not of the organisation as a whole. What is your view on that? Would you like to see a stronger participation from the Catholic Church?
I would truly welcome it, personally. We are already very grateful to be able, in these two commissions which are linked to the programme in which I am working, the Faith and Order and the Commission of World Mission and Evangelism, where the Catholic Church is full member through the persons it sends. And to speak as a missiologist, I feel that on this level, while it has been one of the major conflicts in the past, in present time I would say we are aiming at quite similar understandings of what mission and evangelism is. Not on all things, of course, and there are points on which we would put the emphasis differently. But basically, I would say since the 60s, we have moved quite near to each other in the understanding of a holistic understanding of what witness means. Now, sometimes in Catholic Church you speak of that as evangelization, we say mission. And for us, evangelism is the proclamation for which sometimes you use agenda. So the terminology may change, but we have this wider circle which speaks of the whole witness of the whole church to the whole world, and then some parts of it, which is sharing the gospel to people, inviting them to become disciples.
There has been so much progress in so many areas, some of these that you're talking about, over recent decades, that many people are growing quite impatient with the ecumenical movement, which doesn't seem to be going anywhere at the moment. People talk about the ecumenical winter at the moment.
Yeah, we have moved into a difficult time since the end of the 80s, I would say. Difficult in the sense that it's an interim. I see this as an interim period. We had very strong progress made. And of course, it always depends how far back you look. If I see now that we have all we do together and think of my grandmother, she would think it's incredible what has happened. But if I look back 10 years, I think I'm impatient. So it really depends how far back you look at it. And so people like us working day for day on ecumenical questions can sometimes become impatient. I am one of those. And sometimes I think, Lord, how long? You know, and of course, being a Protestant, I'm angry sometimes at the Catholics or at the Orthodox, as they are with me. So we have to both. I think we need a ministry of patience and a ministry of impatience, if I may say so. We need to accept that healing and reconciliation process take long time, generations. That at the same time, we need a prophetic ministry of impatience, telling people now it's time to go a step further. And I would hope we could go a step further as soon as possible.
And my thanks there to Jacques Maté, director of the World Council of Churches program on unity, mission, evangelism and spirituality. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again, if you can, at the same time tomorrow, or find all our news and feature programmes on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.